In the film Forrest Gump, about halfway through the film, the title character has found himself now a shrimp boat captain, having been a war hero, a college football star, an international ping pong champion. He now, in fulfillment of the promise to an old army buddy, has taken his money and invested in a shrimp boat. And on one occasion, it's one of the more charming moments of the film, as he is pulling his shrimp boat into harbor, he spots on one of the docks waiting for him to return his old army lieutenant, known simply as Lieutenant Dan. Forrest is so filled with joy at seeing his Lieutenant Dan that without thinking, he jumps into the sea and swims to shore to greet his friend, leaving his shrimp boat to careen into another nearby dock. The two of them partner up in the shrimping business and for a time have very, very little luck. But then when a hurricane strikes the region and he is the only one who does not pull his boat ashore and therefore is the only boat that is not washed ashore in the storm surge, and they have a large catch of shrimp on a regular basis as a result of the storm. I think of this sequence in Forrest Gump whenever I hear or read today's gospel. We see very similar images, the great catch of fish, and Peter being so full of joy at recognizing the risen Jesus that without thinking and leaving his associates behind to haul the catch of fish themselves, he jumps into the sea and swims ashore to be with Christ, his very good friend and Messiah. But when we look at this particular story in the Gospels, only Luke and John tell that story. Luke places the miracle at the beginning of Christ's ministry and associates it with the call of his first disciples. John places the miracle at the end of his gospel story and associates the miracle with the resurrection of Jesus. In the gospel of Luke, Peter sees the miracle after a long night in which he caught nothing, and he asks Jesus to depart from him. In the Gospel of John, after a long night of catching nothing, Peter sees the miracle and recognizes Jesus and swims ashore to be with Christ. Both accounts end with a commission of Peter. In the Gospel of Luke, Jesus says, "Do not be afraid, from now on you will be catching men." And in the Gospel of John, we have the elongated exchange between Jesus and Peter that ends with not only the commission, "Feed my lambs and feed my sheep," but the assurance that in Peter's case, and perhaps all disciples, his life is now no longer his own. But both of them place the gospel in different locations. And in the case of today's gospel, there is so much that goes on in this one encounter that it would be a daunting task to give a talk or a homily that covers everything. But I like to point out that whether or not it happened as it did, or whether it happened at the beginning of Christ's ministry, or at the end of Christ's ministry, or perhaps even both, I like to focus on how we could relate this particular gospel story in John, and not how this is an encounter or a vision of the risen Jesus, but how Jesus is recognized in the great catch of fish. In this particular case, John even gives us an exact number of fish that is caught in the net. 153 large fish. Luke does not give that detail, but John does. And with all the resurrection stories of Jesus, they are not so much vision stories or stories of appearances, but also stories of how Jesus is recognized. Because at the outset, they don't recognize him. And then something happens to make them recognize it is the Lord. And in today's gospel, it is the miracle of the catch of fish, which some would suggest is not just the miracle in and of itself, but is a metaphor for the work of the early church. And when you think about what the early church did and the great catch of souls that the early church brought in by preaching someone who was crucified, we consider that nothing less than miraculous. And this is the most fearsome form of execution ever devised. And they're preaching a man crucified and bringing in a great catch of souls. Nothing less than miraculous. And to people who have the insight of the beloved disciple, who in many ways symbolizes all disciples, they recognized in that great catch of the early church the continued work of the risen Christ, who brings that catch to the church and enables them to be those fishers of souls. And it's in that that they recognize the risen Christ. It's in that that they have great hope in the mission Christ has given to them. And it is in that that they have that joy that even though he has ascended into heaven, the risen Christ is still with them, albeit on the shore, encouraging them to cast that net one more time to catch the fish that Christ keeps sending to them, souls to be saved by the good news of the gospel. But another way in which I like to look at this is also something that in many ways flies in the face of a common attitude we have today with regard to a reservation that many Christians have in proclaiming that gospel. And perhaps because of that, we see a growing secularization of our society in particular, a downplaying of Judeo-Christian values, and even perhaps a point of shame for many Christians to not really emulate that gospel. And the attitude there is, well, we don't want to really impose our views on people who don't believe it. We want to be, what's the word? Oh yeah, respectful of where people are coming from. But when you look at the great catch of fish as a metaphor for the gospel and the evangelization of the church, we see in John's gospel, he gives us an exact count, 153 large fish. How's that for a point of reflection and simply asking the simple question? How many of those 153 large fish did you think actually wanted to be in the net? How many do you think were not trying desperately to swim out of the net? And yet, the apostles had caught them in the net, a net that was not going to tear. They dragged that net onto shore where there was no hope for those fish to escape. And those fish were cooked and eaten. How's that for a metaphor of the work of the church? And when you look at that image and the words of Christ in Luke's story of the catch of fish, in which he says to Peter, "Have no fear. From now on, you will be finessing men." No. "Have no fear. From now on, you will be wooing men." No. He says to Peter, "Have no fear. From now on, you will be catching men." I think Jesus would agree with the attitude of this day and age. Jesus does not want us to impose our views on people. He wants us to ram it down their throats, whether they want it or not. He wants us to catch them in the net as fish. Now, this, of course, is not to say that we punish people or chastise people or burn them at the stake or hang them from a sour apple tree whenever they don't become Christian. As a church, we respect people's liberty to worship as they wish. But there is nothing that forbids anyone from working to develop a Christian society in which the gospel is the basis of how we live as a society. Case in point, in the history of this country, abolition was a Christian movement that many people did not agree with and did not welcome. There was a young senator from New Hampshire who would eventually become President Franklin Pierce, who once from the floor of the Senate condemned the extremist Christians for pushing abolition, dividing our nation, that he said was imposing a religious view in a nation that cherished the separation of church and state. And of course, there were many Christians in the South who did not believe that those of African descent were of equal dignity before God and of human beings of the same quality as white men and women. And yet, that Christian movement made its presence felt, and now we are in a society that can't imagine slavery ever having ever existed, let alone possibly could exist now. There were many who didn't want that Christian value to be a part of this society, but they got it anyway. But that's an example of where views were imposed. Christianity was emulated and made a part of the fabric of this society. But that is an example of what we are called to as followers of Christ today, as we go forth to be those catchers of men, those fishers of souls, to call all people in an effort of new evangelization into the net that is the gospel. We are not there to pull back in the face of popular notions of separation of church and state or not wanting to impose our view, but we are nonetheless there to promote the values of the gospel and in that draw people into the net of Christianity. And we continue to recognize the presence of the risen Christ on the shore, who even after a night of darkness in which there might be much discouragement, will still say, cast your net one more time over the side. And at the right side at that. He didn't say the left side, he said the right side. Cast your net one more time for a catch. And Christ will send us those souls, and by his presence and his grace, we will be those catchers of souls. So let us emulate the apostles in recognizing the risen Christ continually in our midst. Let us go forth with that great Easter joy that we see expressed in Forrest Gump as he jumped into the sea to be with his good friend, but as we see in today's gospel that Peter was filled with when he recognized the risen Christ in his midst. And let us go forth without fear, but let us all hear that word of God that we are all to be fishers of souls. We are all called to engage in the new evangelization, to bring that gospel message to the world of today. Let us recognize the continued presence and work of the risen Christ, not the least of which is continuing to work for a society that has as its base Judeo-Christian values, but in all things recognize that it is through us, not of us, that all this is accomplished. We stand with the beloved disciple, and we recognize it is the risen Lord in our midst.